So now we're to section 11, which is packaging.
Why is packaging of my product so important?
Because you're selling to a retail store, packaging is critically important. It's one of the most important things because the packaging of your product is what's going to make the sale. You don't have a salesperson standing there in the aisle at Walmart dragging people over and telling them why they should buy this. It has to be done by the packaging. And it has to grab the attention of somebody walking down the aisle who's exposed to hundreds or thousands of things they can see at any given time. It has to grab their attention, get that person to look at your package, pick it up, and then it has to make the sale. So the packaging can be even more important than the product itself.
I know the subject of packaging can be a whole nother seminar in itself. Can you talk about some of the different packaging for different distribution channels?
Sure. And that's something that if you're going to be selling into multiple distribution channels, you really need to pay attention to. If you're going to sell anything into Walmart or other mass market retailers, there's a bunch of criteria you have to follow, but basically you'll need a UPC code on there so they can be scanned at the scanner, and you need to conform to the requirements of the mass market. On the other hand, for gift or independent stores, in that case, package with a UPC code on it is death. If they see that, they won't want to buy it. So in that case, you might sell a product loose or on a little wire display where they're hanging there or in other ways that would be totally unworkable in a Walmart or a Target. And the reason for that is they want to distinguish themselves from Walmart and Target. They don't want products in their store to look like anything you can get at Walmart, because if you can, you'll buy it at Walmart. So the packaging for a gift independent stationery kind of store is totally different. And then yet again, mass market, but say Sam's Club or Costco, the warehouse stores, in those cases, they have you bundle stuff into big bundles. Like if you're selling Scotch tape and you're 3M and you have one package of Scotch tape sitting on a shelf somewhere, in Costco, they'll shrink wrap 24 of those Scotch tape dispensers into one bulk thing, and they sell all 24 of them as an item. So if you're fortunate enough to get in those warehouse stores, you're going to end up with multiples of your product shrink-wrapped or bundled together to be sold as a unit. And then the fourth thing, anytime you're selling with direct mail or mail order catalogs or TV infomercials, you don't even need packaging. The only purpose of the packaging then is to protect the product, because you're not going to see the packaging. When a direct mail or a TV infomercial, you see the product itself and being used, or you get sold on why you should buy it through direct marketing of some sort, but they don't ever sell it to you by the package. So the sale is made by the infomercial person or the sales letter or whatever. So in that case, you just need it for protection.
What are some of the jobs my packaging must accomplish?
In the case of retail stores or mass market, because that's the focus of what we're talking about, there are seven things your packaging must do. And if you fall on any of these, you've got a big problem. You're dead. Number one, we've already been talking about, which is to make the sale. It has to grab the attention of that consumer and yank them out of the aisle and make the sale of the product. Secondly, it has to protect the product. The product has to be able to be shipped and get to the store and get merchandised in the store and have the product protected. Remember, we don't want rejects or returns, so we've got to have the packaging done properly to protect the product. The third thing is legal requirements. The one most people are real familiar with are the labeling criteria for food. All packaged foods have all these percent fat, percent protein, and all the ingredients listed and everything. But there can be legal requirements for other things, too. If it's a toy product, child safety laws apply. So whatever your product is, you want to make sure that you're meeting the legal requirements. Number four, requirements by the retailer. This includes the UPC code, but it also includes making sure that it'll fit in the merchandising displays or the shelves in the store. And if you have a really little product, they may want it shrink-wrapped on a large backer so that it's harder to steal or shoplift. So retail requirements are number four. Number five is on-pack or in-pack promotions. This is not so much a requirement of the retailer, but you should do for your own self and your own business, because promotions done properly on the package or in the package can help you sell a lot more product. And in one case I'll tell you about in a little bit, it can even launch a new business for you. Number six, any kind of instruction manual or instructions on how to use the product. If it's not totally obvious, if some instructions are needed, whether they're on the package or on the manual inside, you have to attend to that. Number seven, we talked about a little bit already, which is the special packaging that a distribution channel might require for somebody like Costco's or Sam Club's, the bulk pack. The last thing, what you can do to start a new business. If you do an on-pack promotion wrong, you can get kicked out of the store. If you do it right, they'll love you, and you can start a new company with it. And I did that with my stickers. I was going to do a promotion where if you bought one package for a dollar in the Walmart stores, you could cut out the UPC code and send it in, and we'd give you a dollar off an assortment of stickers. And you could send in five UPC codes to get $5 off an $8 assortment. So what that means is that from the point of view of the Walmart buyer, he looked at that and said, well, if anybody wants that mail-in offer, they're going to buy five packages of stickers because they get all their money back. So I love that. He wanted me to put it on the front of the package and make it more prominent than I'd even planned on. However, had I tried to sell the exact same product that was in the store, they wouldn't have let me do it or they would have kicked me out because they would have viewed that as competition for them. And they don't want to help my company sell to the consumer direct so they don't have to go to Walmart. The product I had as a mail-in offer was a bulk assortment of stickers, which is something that was never available in any store. So it was totally different. So they loved that. So it's a touchy thing. You've got to do it right. But what I ended up doing, because people would mail in their UPC codes, then what we would do is we'd mail out their stickers they just bought along with another catalog, and that turned into a mail order business, doing business directly with the consumer.
And Walmart helped you create it.
Walmart and Target and everywhere else our packages were.
That's brilliant. How am I going to make my package sell?
Remember we said that you need to grab the consumer's attention. The best way to do this, and this is what Procter & Gamble does, is you go into the stores where your product's going to be, and you look at what's there. If you look at detergents, and they're all bright orange or bright blue or whatever, come up with a look or color or a style that stands out. One of the things we did with the stickers at one point in the early days is everything else was really, really blast of color, so we did black and white packaging, which jumped right out at you because everything else was like full color. So I can't tell you what to do for your product. What I can tell you to do is how to figure it out, and that is go look where your product will be merchandised and either with the packaging or the color or both come up with a unique look. It could be a unique type of box. Everybody else may have one kind of box. You could come up with a different kind of box that's a different shape or something. So you need to stand out, and when you're looking at needing to stand out, you need to stand out compared to what's going to be next to you in the store. It needs to be clear that your product is different, it grabs attention, and it also needs to be clear what your product does. I had a client who had a package for a store for a product that would fix cracks in porcelain in bathtubs or sinks, and their logo was like a little wizard guy with a wand, and that was on the front of their package. And you can say, okay, I walked down the aisle and I see a little wizard there. Well, what the hell is that? It didn't tell what your product does. The only way you could tell what the product does was to pick that up, turn it around, and read the small print. So we obviously had to change the packaging. A trap you could get into is putting your company name or your company logo real big on the package. The consumer doesn't care about that. The consumer cares about what is it, why should I buy it, what will it do for me.
Are there services and companies out there who are experts at packaging that I could hire or do consulting with?
Yes, there are. And you can find packaging consultants in Google. Or you can look in a big green book called the Thomas Register. It's a directory of manufacturers. One project I had was a skate bike, which was an unusual product. It was like a unicycle, but at the very bottom, another bar came out with skateboard wheels in front to make it easier to ride. Now, since nobody had ever seen this product before or didn't exist, we have an issue of communicating what it is because we were selling it in a box, not like a bicycle where it's already assembled. And I used a package design firm in that case. But they can be expensive. We paid $25,000 to get the package design done. But we ended up with something that when you glanced at that package from 25 feet away, you could see what it was. Because they had a photograph of the product on the outside of the box, and you could see it assembled and what it was, and there were pictures of kids riding it and the whole thing. It was instantly obvious. Package design can be expensive. When I was at Kimberly-Clark with Kleenex, I mean, they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's a study of $250,000 to determine whether the blue box should go by the pink box and should it be on the third shelf or the second shelf. And if the way they're merchandised in the store can make a 1% difference in sales, and if your sales are $1 billion, 1% is what, $10 million per year? So for the big guys, they can afford to spend big bucks on little things. For us little guys, we got to just do what we can do.
All right, let's talk about the breakage. How do I know if my product is tough enough to withstand all the distribution of these mass merchandisers so it doesn't get knocked around and broken?
It will get knocked around. I can recall one time I went to a trade show. I watched the UPS guy unload the truck. He was in the truck and he was throwing the boxes onto the loading dock. So what I came up with is something that served me well. It's real simple. Take your product in the package, climb up on a chair over a concrete driveway or concrete sidewalk, and drop it 10 feet. You need to do this with the individual product and with the product in a case pack. You know, if your case pack is 24 units in a case, do it with the case. Do it with the individual product. If your product is on a backer card, like a blister pack or something, hold it where the hanger hole is, where it hangs on the hook, and then slam it on the side of a desk as hard as you can on its edge. Because if it is packaged that way and it's not done properly, the blister will come off. Any kind of thing where you have printing on the outside of plastic, the test for that is to take Scotch tape, rub it on there real firmly, but hold on to an end of it, and then pull it off. And if when you pull it off, any ink sticks to the tape, you know you've got an ink adhesion problem.
How about legal requirements for my packaging? Is that going to vary depending on what my product is and what some stuff I should consider?
It definitely will vary. The one people are familiar with, like we mentioned before, would be food. Even on things like clothes or apparel, you have care instruction rules on apparel. How do you wash it, for example? Child safety laws for children's products or toys. So you can't possibly think of every industry, but whatever your product is, you need to check out your particular requirements for your industry. And you can do that at the Consumer Product Safety Commission website, which is, I think, cpsc.org, or just type in Consumer Product Safety Commission to Google and you'll find it. What they have there is they have the regulations by industry, and there'll be like 100 different industries, and if you're in the toy business, click on toys, and it'll show you all the regulations related to toys. That's one way to check out the law if you're not familiar with it.
Each mass merchandiser or retailer has different packaging requirements. Can you discuss some of the things I'm going to need to be aware of as far as the retailer's packaging requirements?
Sure. Aside from the UPC code so that they scan properly, one of the other things you need to do is you have to make sure that they're going to fit on the shelves. I've seen people put things in a package that was, say, round or something like that, and if it's round or some sort of unusual packaging, and if the normal packaging on the shelf is boxes and the product can be stacked, you can't stack a round product. So what you've just done is you've made sure the retailer can't put as much of it on each square foot of shelf space, and you're going to have a higher return on investment for them to justify carrying your product. So you just shot yourself in the foot. If your product is something that needs to be stacked in the store, make sure it stacks. This is a funny one I've seen people mess up on. If it's on a backer card with a blister pack or shrink wrap or anything, and it's not centered, the weight of the product is not right in the center of the card, what you have to do is you have to make sure that the hole that it's going to hang from and that's put through the backer card is in the right place to make it hang right. And I've seen that mistake happen where everything was hanging crooked because they put the hole in the middle, but the weight wasn't evenly distributed.
All right, you had mentioned UPC code. Can you tell me what exactly is a UPC code and give me some ideas of why I'll need one of these?
Okay, first off, it's a requirement of the mass market retailers and the grocery drug retailers. You won't be in the store without one. It stands for Universal Product Code. The way you get one is through the Uniform Code Council. Their website is www.uc-council.org, and you go there and you can apply for one there. But there's a few things that you need to know about UPC codes that you might not find easy to learn. The first thing is, if you ever look at one, you'll see there's two sections of numbers at the bottom. That first five digits, they assign you. That's your manufacturer number. The next five digits, you assign. So what that means is you're going to decide what those numbers are going to be, and then you're going to order the film masters or the artwork from companies who are in that business. And the artwork is going to vary depending on how you're going to print it. A screen-printed UPC code, they're going to give you artwork where the lines are a little thinner than they need to be because the printing process expands the width. If it's offset printed, it'll be different. So when you order them, you have to tell them what printing process you're going to use for them to give you the correct artwork. One other point to make before I forget about the digits. When you're going to assign the last five digits, you need to put some thought into that because when any computer is going to sort to do a sales report by product or by UPC code number, it's going to sort those things. So when you think about your five-digit number, I would put your products in groups. You might have 1,000 and then 1,100 represents one group of products, 1,200 are another group, and then you have 1,101, 1,102, and so on. So what you want to think about when you're assigning the numbers to your products is think about how they'll sort on a computer that sorts in numerical order and make sure your products sort in the groups that they are. That'll make it easier for the retailer and for you. Though you can print a UPC code in any color you want, I would recommend that you make sure it's black and white, black bars on a white background. Even if you have a full color package, I'd block out a white rectangle and print the black over that. That's not a requirement. But the one thing I really want to always make sure of is that the things scan properly. And the best scanning is with the black on white. Another thing to be careful of, you're going to get a manual when you get your UPC code that's about 200 pages long telling you how to use it. It's all technical stuff. But the thing you need to know, at 100% size, or the size the UPC code artwork comes in, is about an inch high, or inch and a quarter high. Unless you have to, don't shrink that. Because though you're allowed to shrink it down to 75% of that, the more you shrink it, the tighter the tolerances get for it to be able to be scanned. In your printing process or printing your packaging, there's less room for error. So anytime I'm making a product, I get a bunch of them printed, and then I take them over to a grocery store, take them over to a Target, and I want to make sure they scan on the scanners that are really in the stores. And I've had it happen where I went over to the store with my samples already printed and ready to go, and I ran it through the scanner, and it didn't work. So that's a little test you can do yourself for no money. It's critical because retailers tend to get upset with you if your product isn't scanned. People have to type it in manually, and that's just another sign you don't know what you're doing. It's not a good thing. In that book you get, by the way, it tells you where the UPC code is supposed to be put on any given kind of package. Where does it go on a little card? Where does it go in a box? There are set locations that it belongs in that are the standard, so you need to follow what the manual says.
All right, what about if I have a product that has instructions or there's a manual that comes with it? What are some of the regulations and things that I'm going to need to keep in mind on that?
First off, the best way to do instructions or manuals, write what you think you need to write that describes how to use your product and then give it to somebody who's never seen it before, or give it even to a teenager or somebody. Somebody who has no clue about it, and make sure they understand it. All the time I see actual instruction manuals that are either in such small type I need a magnifying glass to read them, or they're written by engineers and there's no way in the world you can figure out what they say. So if you have a technical product, have somebody read those instructions who has no technical ability whatsoever and make sure they're understandable. Secondly, we had a problem at Kimberly-Clark because I was making non-woven fabric into tablecloths where the tablecloths could be washed, and you could buy this tablecloth for $2 and wash it 20 times. And here's a typical example that can happen. When you're in the lab, scientists in laboratories control things. They said that these non-woven fabric tablecloths could be washed. You need to dry them in the dryer under air dry, not under heat, because they're made of polypropylene, and polypropylene, if it's hot enough, will melt. So in a lab, they run all their tests. They do all the tests they like to do for months and months, and the net result is everything is cool. Go ahead with it. Well, as soon as we get it out in the stores, the real world rears its ugly head. And when women put these things in their washer and dryer at home, the washer may be a little hot, or the dryer, even on air, may be hotter than you think. What we had happen, because of real-world variations in temperatures, is a lot of these tablecloths were melting and creating a big blob of plastic in the dryer, and we had to replace the people's dryers. So that's just an example. It's not really about writing instructions, but it's an interesting thing that can happen whenever you're doing your testing if it's not real-world testing and it's laboratory testing. There are a number of different kinds of packaging you need to be aware of, and depending on the kind of product you have, one or more of these may be appropriate. I'll run through the different kinds. And one example, by the way, if your product is ugly or is not attractive, you're going to want a colorful box or colorful packaging. In the case of the stickers, if the artwork and the graphics of the stickers are what you're selling, then you want to have that show. So what we did is we shrink-wrapped them with a clear film so you could see the product, because the product itself was attractive and was making the sale. So the first kind we talked a little bit about already, which is blister pack. That's a card that has a little clear plastic rectangular blister stuck on the card with the product inside. And that's one of the ones when I was referring to, if you're packaging your product this way, you want to hold it by the edge and slam it against the desk on its edge, because that's the test for blisters, because the blister will pop right off there if it wasn't done right. The next kind is clamshells, which I'm sure everybody has seen. Those are the kind where it's absolutely impossible to open. It's a clear plastic material that's sealed all around, and you need multiple pairs of scissors and much frustration to open the package. Another kind is called skin pack, and this is also on a backer card. This is where you have things in weird shapes, and what they do is put a thin film over them, and then there are tiny holes in that backer card which create a vacuum, and it sucks that film down and around the product. So it's actually touching the product and conforming to the product. That's called a skin pack. Then, of course, you can use the poly bag or shrink wrap. Tablecloths or things of that sort are going to be either put in a clear poly bag or shrink-wrapped. And usually a lot of those will have a paper or cardboard insert that tells what they are. The next one everyone's familiar with, which is just a plain old box. And boxes can have cellophane or clear windows in them or without a window, and they can be different shapes. They can be triangular. They can be rectangular. Another kind you don't see too much, but you can just use paper bags. I've seen that done. You can put a header card, which is stapled onto a bag for a small product. Then you can shrink wrap like we did our stickers, which you take the Becker card, you put your product on top of it, and then the film shrinks around the whole thing and holds it on there tightly. And then another one that you see a lot is plastic boxes or tubes. Plastic tube would be like you see shower rod hangers. The time to use the clear plastic box or tube is when the product itself is attractive and you want to show the product through the box.
Can the packaging help me get into one of these retailers? Do they give me feedback on what packaging they want for my particular product? Have you gotten feedback from any of your buyers about that led you to packaging decisions?
Some of that, but that's pretty much up to you more so than them. The retailer, as a rule, doesn't try to get involved in your product designing. We had an example that was absolutely critical to our success with the stickers that may apply to you in other areas, so I'll tell you what happened. One of our first distribution channels for stickers was Hallmark stores and other card and gift stores. Basically, what that amounts to then is our product is going to have to hang on Hallmark's hooks. So what we did is we designed our product to have the same size backer card as a Hallmark sticker and the same size and shape of hole to hang it on so that it would fit right on Hallmark's displays. If we hadn't done that, the Hallmark stores wouldn't have bought our product because then they wouldn't have been able to display it. They would have needed some other kind of display. So it was critical to have a sale that our product just fit the merchandising that was already there. So depending on what your product is and what industry you're in, consider that. If you have competitors who are out there with some sort of special merchandising, you want to make sure your product will fit on their displays.
All right. Is there anything else I need to consider or be aware of related to packaging?
Okay. There's the thing we mentioned before about getting the hole in the right place if it's a product hanging on a backer card so that it hangs straight. And the other thing would be any printing that's on your packaging, you want to check the ink adhesion. If the package is plastic, the scotch tape test work that I described a little bit ago. Another test is to use an eraser on a pencil and try to rub off the ink. If your ink adhesion or packaging isn't done right, the abrasion in the distribution channel is going to make your package look poor by the time it gets to the store. So you definitely don't want to have that happen. That's pretty much the end of the packaging section. There are a lot of things to consider, but they can be absolutely critical in determining how well your product will sell, or if it even gets the chance to sell. And the next section is equally important at Section 12, which is merchandising.
This is the end of Section 11. Please continue to Section 12.